In this series, we're thinking about the kindness of Jesus to reveal the things we cannot do. So we're looking at phrases where Jesus says one cannot or no one can, and we want to discover some gospel wisdom for us in amongst those words of Christ. So this morning we're in Matthew chapter 5. If you have a pew Bible, you want to be on page 977. Page 977. If you've got it on your mobile phone or whatever, the words will be on screen as well. So let's just follow along. Matthew chapter 5, and we're reading from verse 33 to 37. This comes from Jesus' famous sermon on the Mount. And he says, "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil.'" This is the word of the Lord for us this morning. Have you ever stopped to pay attention to the assumptions, our everyday givens by which we do life? For instance, in our day, a dominant cultural assumption, one of the things we assume about life, goes something like this. It says, whatever you want to be, you can be. You don't have to fit into a box. If you want to be a scientist or go to the moon, you can do that stuff. We assume very self-affirming things in our culture. So this and slogans like these, if you can dream it, you can do it, is an unquestioned truth assumption our culture makes about life. In Jesus' day, there were assumed truths about life as well, unquestioned truths for life. And Jesus draws our attention to these with his words, "You have heard that it was said." You have heard that it was said. And Jesus is about to tell us a general truth that permeates the culture of his day. So before we go any further, there is an implicit truth or an implicit point for us here. If Jesus was able to say, "You have heard that it was said," it's because Jesus has taken the time to listen to what was being said. Jesus has taken the time to learn and to hear the cultural voices of his day. Don't overlook this. If Jesus was able to take the time and listen to the cultural assumptions of his day, then you, if you are a follower of Jesus, do this also. Work hard at finding, listening, and then engaging with the popular slogans and ideas which dominate our cultural landscape. Jesus did this. Let's follow him by his example. So let's follow Jesus' words. Let's discover what this unquestioned truth assumption was which captivated so many of his day. Jesus said that you have heard that it was said to those of old, "You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn." At first glance, it sounds a lot like Bible. The kinds of things people were saying, "You shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn." It sounds like Bible, right? It sounds a lot like when Jules in Pulp Fiction starts saying, "The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men." When we first hear that, we just think, yeah, you're just quoting Bible. It sounds like Bible. But is it? Truth be told, what Jesus just quoted for us is a couple of Bible verses blended together. Blended as it may be, it gives us an insight into what some people believed about making promises or taking oaths in his day. So first, let me show you how what Jesus just quoted was a blending of various Bible verses. In the Bible, we do find instruction about making oaths and keeping your promise, being people of your word. We find these kinds of verses in the Bible. Leviticus, "You shall not swear by my name falsely and so profane the name of your God." And we find again in Numbers, "If a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." Deuteronomy, a last example here. "If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay in fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you." All this is to say, when Jesus says, "You have heard it said," and then tells us what is being said, it sounds a lot like the kind of thing we hear in the Bible. And yet, because Jesus is about to challenge this saying of his day, we know there must have been a deep-rooted problem. A deep-rooted problem with the way in which people applied this truth to their lives. There's a problem, and Jesus is about to challenge the problem. See, some people of Jesus' day believed in degrees of promises and oaths. There were degrees of promises and oaths. Some oaths were breakable and some were unbreakable. And the way that you determined where a promise or an oath ranked, whether it was a breakable or an unbreakable promise, had to do with the authority that you appealed to when you made your promise. So, for example, in Jesus' day, some people would swear a promise by heaven and earth as an appeal to their higher authority that would guarantee their promise. In some ways, when they said, "Yeah, by heaven and earth, I promised," this was their equivalent of putting their hand on the Bible and swearing an oath. And as far as these kinds of oaths were concerned, oaths which invoked heaven or earth, these kinds of oaths were considered lesser oaths. They were the breakable kind of oaths. You could wiggle your way out of these kinds of promises. As long as it was heaven and earth, you can wiggle your way out of that somehow. And contrasted with this were the very serious, or the really serious oaths of Jesus' day, the unbreakable ones, the one no one should dare to violate. And these oaths, many believed, were only the oaths that invoked the name of God. So, if someone made a promise by the name of God, they might say something as, "God is my witness, I promise to do such and such." Right? That was the really serious oath, because you said God in your promise, right? That was considered an unbreakable oath because God was involved. So in everyday life, people were splitting their promise making into two different camps: promises they could break and promises that they knew they could not break. It reminds us of kids' antics, right? Where one sibling might say to the other, "I'll give you 2 pieces of chocolate if you tidy my room for me." But they'll say it like this, with their fingers crossed behind their back. "I will give you those pieces of chocolate if you tidy my room. But I had my fingers crossed." In much the same way, this was how some people treated these lesser oaths and promises they were making to one another. As long as God's name wasn't mentioned in my promise, it was like having my fingers crossed. I could wiggle my way out of that promise, no sweat. So what problem does this reveal about the people of Jesus' day and our own? It reveals within us, within humanity, a willingness, a capacity for trickery when it comes to giving someone our word or making a promise. It reveals that there's trickery at work within the human soul when we're making promises, giving someone our word. It's something we're all capable of. We look for escape routes when we're making promises, right? When it becomes difficult to keep your promise, we start looking for ways to get out of the promise. We start looking for, did I have my fingers crossed? Is there a way out for me in this difficult promise that I have made? In Jesus' day, some people thought they could escape their promises as long as they didn't invoke the name of God. In our day, we cross our fingers or we look for fine print in the legal contract, or we play word games like we misspoke. I didn't really mean what I said. I just misspoke. Let me out of my promise. Jesus confronts this trickery at work within our beings, within our hearts. So follow Jesus' words once more. Jesus says, but I say to you, do not take an oath at all. As we listen to Jesus' words, let's just pay attention to a few at a time. Let's begin with, but I say to you. In these words, Jesus shows us that he is not just another self-help guru who's dishing out good advice towards humanity. Plainly, he intends us to see and to recognize that some of the advice that we're listening to from the culture around us is wrong and foolish. And he intends to correct us at these moments, right? When Jesus says, but I say to you, he says, look, you have heard things said. You have taken and absorbed things from the culture around you, but it's wrong. It's foolish. Now, I say to you, here's the correct way to think about all of this. He commands that which will make us wise, and we are to take him at his word and adjust our understanding of life accordingly. You know, at this point, as we're just thinking about those words of Jesus, but I say to you, I just want to ask you, does Jesus hold this right in your life? Have you given him the right to expose and confront some of the mistaken, foolish, and wrong-headed assumptions you've made about life? If not, I need you to know that following Jesus means relinquishing the driver's seat of your life, so to speak, right? It really means genuinely asking Jesus, Jesus, I don't want to drive anymore. I want you. I really, really want you to drive. I want you to take the wheel, Jesus. And if he is the driver, you are going to expect him to adjust your course. Every now and again, at times he will graciously say to you, you have heard it said, you have believed this about life, but I say to you. And it's how you respond to Jesus saying, but I say to you, where you discover whether you are really following Jesus or whether you are asking Jesus to follow you. We need to hear it as Christian people. I need to hear it. That Jesus says to me sometimes, but I say to you. And then he calls me to obedience. He calls me to change, to repent. And the grace that he offers to change what I believe about life. So here Jesus offers one such gracious moment of life adjustment to his audience. Do not take an oath at all. As we pay attention to Jesus' words here, two things will become apparent to us. There are two things that become apparent. Firstly, among the community of Jesus' followers, there are no higher or lesser degrees of promise-making or oath-making. There is no some are breakable and some are unbreakable. When you follow Jesus, he removes that rug from under your feet. Every oath that a Christian makes, every promise, every word that we give to someone, whether we invoke the name of God or not, is an unbreakable promise according to Jesus. Jesus made this point because he says, even if you make a promise by heaven or by earth or by a holy city like Jerusalem, it's all mine. There is no place by which you can make a promise where I am not. Heaven is my throne. Earth is my footstool. My city of Jerusalem, it's all mine. So whether you make a promise by them or by me, it's all mine. It's all unbreakable. You are to keep your word. Secondly, Jesus points out that even if we grant that outward appeals to heaven, earth, Jerusalem as a guarantee for our promises, even if those things are out of bound, right? We can't promise by heaven, no, can't do earth, we can't do the holy city. Even if we grant that to what Jesus is saying here, what about the inward? What if I name myself as the guarantor for my promise? I'm a trustworthy person. I am the guarantor of the promise that I'm about to make. And Jesus says this. He says, do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. And it's in those words that we find the kindness of Jesus to reveal to us something which we cannot do. We can't even dictate our hair follicles. Some of us even have less to dictate than others. But we can't even change such finer details of our constitution. So making ourselves the guarantor of our promises offers no certainty, offers no higher level of authority or appeal to authority that we will actually keep our word. Right? So if someone says to you, I swear on my life, I will keep the promise. To Jesus, that's a meaningless statement, man. What is your life? What is your hair follicle, he would say. You can't even change the color of your hair. What good is the promise that you make on your own life? That's the wisdom and grace Jesus offers us here. So where to from here? These words of Jesus, do not take an oath at all. They are imminently applicable to our life and times, right? Very practically speaking, many of us will face the prospect of having to take an oath at some point in our lives, whether it be on the witness stand in court, some affidavit, or civilian matter. So the question for us this morning is, if Jesus said what he said, that we are not to take an oath at all, are we ever permitted to take an oath, even in things like civilian matters of the courtroom? Are we ever allowed to put our hand on the Bible and swear that we will tell the truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God? It's a good question, isn't it? Some corners of the Christian community have thought very hard and very deeply about this, and they have submitted to themselves that they will never ever take an oath of that kind at all. So in the modern day, we know this corner of the Christian community as the Quakers. If you ever meet Quakers, they won't make promises this way. They have said Jesus means no O's at all. Others in the Christian community have said that Jesus was not prohibiting all forms of oaths, just those people entered into with the intention of breaking, right? When people enter into oaths with this huge gray zone of wiggle room to get out of it, Jesus is saying, don't do those kinds of oaths. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't leave a gray area in your promise making, right? So some Christians have said that this is what Jesus has in his sights. And this is what I tend to agree with. Though I deeply respect the commitment of the Quaker community to take Jesus at his word this way. The reason I tend to agree that Jesus was not prohibiting all kinds of oaths is because when we look at Jesus' life, he himself submitted to civilian oaths at times. Let me give you an example of this. Jesus is before the high priest Caiaphas. And Caiaphas puts Jesus under oath. He says, I adjure you by the living God. That is an oath. That is swear by God. Tell us if you are Christ, the Son of God. And how does Jesus respond? Sorry, Caiaphas, I don't do oaths. That's not how Jesus responds, right? Jesus submits himself to the oath. And he says, you have said so. But I tell you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power, coming in the clouds of heaven. So notice that Jesus himself doesn't protest every oath, but he submits himself to one at this occasion. If you read elsewhere in the New Testament, you will find the Apostle Paul does this sometimes. If you read in Corinthians, he will say things like, as God is my witness, right? I tell you the truth, I do not lie. So we do find examples in the New Testament where people do submit themselves to oaths of some kind. So this is why I think not all oaths are prohibited by Jesus. Only those we fully do not intend to keep in the first place. The ones we leave gray zone areas, right, for a reason. Because we want to get out of them. So this brings us to a second lesson from the passage. Jesus was setting a high standard for those who would follow him. Jesus sets this standard for his community of followers. He says, let what you say be simply yes or no. Just be clear with people. Say what you mean and mean what you say. Don't be so gray and so wishy-washy about stuff. If you make a commitment, keep it. Otherwise, just don't make the commitment. No one's going to say, oh, you should have made the commitment. Jesus says, just don't make it if you don't intend to keep it. But if you do make it, keep it. That is what his followers are like. It is a standard for their lives. I need not labor this point much at all. Jesus just means for his followers to have such integrity, such quality of character, that no one should ever have to listen to a Christian make a promise and then ask the question, but do you promise? Will you really do it? Of the Christian community, those questions should never be asked. We are people of our word. That's what Jesus is getting at here. That we are so faithful with the truth that no one will ever doubt our word. That is our reputation as followers of Jesus. Now, let me wind this up. With such a high standard in place, we want to step back and ask the question, why would we ever want to swear an oath or guarantee our promises in the first place? Why do courtrooms New Zealand-wide often require a hand to be placed on the Bible? Why do we have concepts such as Scout's Honour or the Consumer Guarantees Act? Why do we have such things that we vouchsafe our promises with? The reason is this: we know dishonesty is deeply rooted within the human condition. Dishonesty is deeply rooted within our human condition. Every one of us, even the best of us, have the capacity to bend, distort, or deny the truth. And because we know this is part of our human condition, we recognize the need to appeal to an higher authority when we're making promises. And this is so because of our sin. Sin has broken what is true and good in us. And we need the gospel help that Jesus offers to mend our lives again. To this end, Jesus invites people to follow him, to receive forgiveness and the power to live a transformed life.